that, but I'd just soon have a full committee when we get started, so we'll start hearing the bill, and then once we get the members here, we'll take a break and do the minutes and do the pledge. So Representative Gunther, House File 942.
How you doing again, Mr. Chairman? It's the second time before this wonderful committee. Feel very at home here. This 942 deals with the Martin County Veterans Memorial. It's a project that started, and the people have been working very, very hard on it. They got a wonderful site for it right next to a ball field, and they have a lot of it done. They got a 70-foot flag along with a big concrete slab, but they're going to put granite.
Correct.
And they're going to put veterans' names from Martin County. And my two brothers, myself, and my father-in-law will all be on there. So it's something very special to me. This project has got a total cost of $1,050,000. We're asking for $400,000 this morning at the Capital Investment Committee. And this is a project that, like I say, they have hit the ground running. They have raised, well, I'll let Mr. Faustness tell how much exactly he raised and how he raised it.
I'm Steve Faustness. I am the commander for the Fairmount American Legion Post 36. I'm a DAV member, and I'm the treasurer for the Martin County Veterans Memorial. The Veterans Memorial was formed to commemorate the men and women of Martin County whose faithful loyalty and service in our armed forces during times of war and peace has helped preserve our nation's freedom. We open it up to anybody that wore a uniform that has an association back to Martin County. We started in February of 2016. Thus far, we've raised $333,000. We're looking for $400,000 from the state. We've gone into a slow slump right now, and we're going back through. Our total project is $1 million. We had land donated to us for $40,000. It's right next to a huge parking lot in the ball field, like Representative Gunther indicated. We have an 80-foot granite wall that will have over 5,000 veterans' names on it. Donors' names, and we have a 70-foot flagpole in the front. We have a 5.5-ton sign out front of granite. And going to the north, we're going to have 8 life-size bronze statues with a reflection pond and benches to commemorate the soldiers in Martin County.
Thank you, sir, for your testimony, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
We're going to stall out here for a minute and see if we can get one more person in here so we can move this bill properly. And any questions from the committee right now? Representative Brand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was former St. Peter City Council member, so for us, we went through this Veterans Memorial process a few years ago ourselves, and we went with a particular bronze sculptor that I think is done a very good job. I was just kind of curious if you could tell us a little bit more about the bronze sculpture and where you plan to, who you plan to work with, and that sort of thing.
On the wall itself, on the east side of the wall is POW, MIA, and KIAs, and we're going to have a granite bench there with a life-size woman statue sitting on the bench with a child in front of her saluting two soldiers that are presenting her with the flag. On the back side is going to be, of the memorial, is going to be a hull of a ship. And we're going to have water shooting up on that with a sailor with a sea bag ready to board the ship. And the other life-size statues are going to be World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and Global War on Terror, which the last one, the GWAT statue, will be a female. And the far end, they're contemplating a helicopter that she's going to be standing next to, so... We're looking at one sculptor in Minnesota and one in Pennsylvania. Right now, it looks like the one in Minnesota, which he has statues across Minnesota right now. So, but the large cost on those, they're looking at each life-size statue is around $35,000. So,
Representative Brand,
thank you very much for sharing that. I look forward to seeing the completed project. I kind of enjoy going to the Veterans Memorials and taking a look at how things are laid out and the story they're trying to convey to the people who are visiting. So I appreciate you also sharing yours today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fosnes. And we'll take care of a couple housekeeping things. First off, Representative Heinrich, would you care to approve the minutes? from last week's meeting?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I haven't had a chance to review the minutes. So if you'll give me one second here.
Mr. Chair, the Army did. We reviewed the minutes, and we're good to go.
Okay. Well, in that case, thank you, Representative Detmer. Mr. Chair, I move to approve the minutes.
Thank you, Representative Heinrich. And it's pretty bad when the Army's got to take care of the Marine Corps. All in favor of the approval of minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion carries. Now we'll do the Pledge of Allegiance, and then we'll move this bill.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So, Representative Gunther, any final comments?
Mr. Chairman, I think this is a very good project, and I think they've worked very hard on it. And I think they, as you can see with the pictures, it's very well planned out, and I'm anxious to see the same thing as well as I am the pavilion in St. Peter.
Thank you, Representative Gunther, and
Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, are they having a celebration? Are they going to have a pork feed or anything like that?
Representative Gunther.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Detmer, I have two of those already here. One's coming May 15th, so it's plan
best,
on it.
The best pork I've ever eaten, too.
There you go.
Thank you, Representative Denford. And Representative Gunther, I'm looking forward to the I-90 party. So with that, the chair renews his motion that House File 942 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion carries. You're on your way to Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative Gunther. Next bill up, House File 2144, Representative Creshaw, the Camp Ripley Military Museum. Representative Creshaw, welcome to the committee, and the chair moves that House File, oops, I'm on the wrong one here. Chair moves that House File 2144 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
And I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, did you want 2144 or 2025? I was prepared to do 2025 first.
I'm going by my agenda here, Representative okay. Creshaw, so I'll have to take a look at that.
Okay.
2144 was the, Representative Creshaw is the military museum?
Correct.
Yes, we'll do that one right now, if that's...
So, did you already move the bill?
Chair moves the House File 2144 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. And so, I'm going to introduce to my right, Randall Dietrich, and he's the... long before being appointed the executive director of the Minnesota Military Museum in the summer of 2017, Mr. Dietrich developed the Greatest Generation Project chaired by General John Vesey for the Minnesota Historical Society. Coordinated the work of the Minnesota Civil, you had to give me this word, didn't you?
Sesquicentennial.
That task force, chaired by Dean Ertl and Mark Ritchie, and himself served on the state World War I Centennial Committee. In addition, Randall's produced documentary programs for Minnesota Public Radio, Twin Cities Public Television. He currently serves as the Secretary of the United Veterans Legislative Council and as the Twin Cities Research Representative for a four-year nationwide veteran suicide prevention study. And with that, I'm going to let him introduce 2144 on the bill.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Randall Dietrich, Executive Director of the Minnesota Military Museum at Camp Ripley. There are two initiatives that we're looking to launch in this biennium, and we're asking your support to make those happen. The first of the two, and you have a handout to support this, is Minnesota Since 9/11 Project. In anticipation of the 20th anniversary of 9/11, the Minnesota Military Museum seeks to launch a sweeping statewide initiative to gather Minnesota stories from soldiers and civilians alike. about America's longest war. We found ourselves on the front line in 2001, and the 20-year resulting global war on terror has been increasingly fought by citizen soldiers of the reserves and National Guard. Thousands of servicemen and women from the state have been deployed overseas, placing tremendous strain on families. Whole units often enjoyed deployment ceremonies and homecomings, but unique to the post 9/11 experience has been the service of individuals like Roger Reiner. Drawn from active duty, guard, and reserves, the experience of these sailors, soldiers, airmen, and Marines is far more solitary and lesser known. Here at home, Minnesota companies and communities have sought to support our troops beyond the yellow ribbons. The time to preserve these records and reflect on this era for the benefit of these veterans, their families, the general public, and future generations is now. In doing so, we're taking a page from history. The state legislature, believing in the importance of documenting Minnesota's record of service, funded this kind of initiative in the aftermath of the Civil War and in the aftermath of World War I. Two definitive state histories resulted that are of enormous value. However, unlike the handwritten letters from the Vietnam era or the Civil War, correspondence, as you know, since 9/11 is electronic and ephemeral. And those committed to preserving these stories, that's a unique challenge. Minnesotans were very involved in 9/11 from the very first day. Tom Burnett, aboard Flight 93, fought back over the skies in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Max Bielke, a Vietnam veteran, was in the Pentagon that morning, was killed. Mark Manny was a pilot in Air Force One. So we have Minnesotans all involved on that day, and then moving forward, what we're proposing is that day of 9/11 that we all have some remembrance of is just the first chapter of this large initiative that we're proposing. Because after that, you have 20 more years of service of the Red Bulls being deployed repeatedly, and we want to gather those stories now. Project components include veteran interviews to be conducted in all 87 counties, a traveling exhibit that results from those interviews to be displayed in armories statewide, public and school programs, a story-sharing website, and a publication, much like one of these, that will continue to inform future generations. That's one of the two major initiatives that we're asking support for. The other initiative that's part of this bill is the Minnesota Military Museum has become the principal repository of General Vesey's collection since he passed away in 2016. As a segue, General Vesey was in New York City the morning of September 11th at the United Nations. We have come into possession of his items. We're in the process of cataloging all of those, but part of the charge that Vesey asked of us when he met with us a number of years prior to his passing was that as we collect and catalog these items, that we continue to display them statewide. So part of this bill and the money attached to it will help us complete the cataloging process and, more importantly, find ways to display his legacy across the state of Minnesota for years to come. Thank you.
Thank you for testimony. Any questions from the committee? And Representative Crenshaw, you have another testifier?
I don't on this bill. Okay. That'll be for the next bill.
All right. Anybody from the audience care to testify for or against this bill? Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I'll be brief.
Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon. My name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm the chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council of 30 veteran organizations in the state of Minnesota. We wholeheartedly support this initiative. 9/11, I was watching it when it happened, and we've been at that war 19 or 18 years, and it's we've got something for the Vietnam, we've got something for the Korea, we've got something for World War II and World War I. This is the collection that needs to be done. General Vesey was there. He's involved in so many things. It was we group together with a man like that, and I think it's proper, especially to have the department to have enough money to keep their project going up there at Camp Ripley. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kaiser. Any questions? Anybody from the audience wish to testify for? Anybody else from the audience wish to testify for or against this bill? Final words, Representative Kreshaw.
It's a great bill.
Thank you, Representative Kreshaw. The chair renews his motion that House File 2144 be referred to Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion carries. And since I went out of order, Mr. Representative Kreshaw, I apologize. So the chair moves that House File 2025 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Kreshaw, you can proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And the previous bill, you heard the importance of the Military Museum. I'm very fortunate in my area that we have two state assets, and I say state assets because the Military Museum that's right now inside the encampment of Camp Ripley, while great, has wonderful archives. If you've ever been there, you'll find it's very crowded, and we're running out of room. And so with that, we've launched into an ambitious project that will move that Military Museum out of Camp Ripley into a more visible location near Highway 371, and also directly south of the only one of two Veterans Memorial Cemeteries in Minnesota. And so there's a tremendous amount of people that come to our area not only to pay respects to family members, but also to remember them through the Military Museum and also for Camp Ripley on active duty. Alongside of this, what I'm really excited about to add to this is one of Minnesota's other large heritages is fishing. And we have no other fishing museum in Minnesota. And I have with me retired Lieutenant Colonel Robert DeRozier, who's going to talk a little bit about how the fishing museum was started in Little Falls by a retired Air Force officer as well. And how this asset, which is so important, is going to couple with the Military Museum, and we're going to bring all of this together into a complex that will become a destination for Minnesota. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I'm going to turn this over to my testifiers. I have with me to my left retired Lieutenant Colonel Robert DeRozier, who's representing the Minnesota Fishing Museum and Hall of Fame. And one quick note, I just heard from staff, we were going to try to do an oral amendment to make sure the Minnesota Hall of Fame, Fishing Museum and Hall of Fame, but I hear we cannot do that, which is fine. We'll do that at the next committee stop. But I want to make abundantly clear that this is a combined project. It's going to save some taxpayer dollars. It's going to actually add some resources and visibility and be incredible assets for Minnesota. So with that, Robert.
Good afternoon. My name is Robert DeRozier. I'm the president of the Minnesota Fishing Museum and Hall of Fame. I'm also a 20-year military retiree, and I began working on this fishing museum project about 22 or 23 years ago with an older gentleman by the name of Al Baird. Al is a Air Force retiree as well as a World War II era veteran. Al worked on this and developed a vision for Minnesota's Fishing Museum long before anybody ever thought of such a thing. His excitement is immense at the consideration of giving us the opportunity to move these two museums together. In fact, Al, at 95 years old, is giddy at the potential for combining two of his lifelong passions, his military career and his fishing passion. Well, many states are fishing destinations, but no other state can compare to Minnesota in all the measurable categories of citizen fishing participation and economic impact. Suffice it to say that fishing is an extremely important to Minnesota's economy, tourism, and its residents. Our museum is currently located in downtown Little Falls. Its location and many other parts of the museum provide for some challenges. We have significant space problems for displays and storage. The building is aging. We've got leaky roofs. We've got huge posts located around the museum, challenging our ability to bring visitors through. And we also have another significant problem with parking. You might ask, why co-locate these two museums? First of all, there's a performance history. Both museums have, for years, created a museum experience with limited resources. Cost savings. Consider the cost savings of joint operations as well as the cost savings for building construction provided by the many collaborative, shared, and common museum spaces. Staffing. Co-locating will also provide for some staffing overlap and expertise. The location. As was mentioned, the proposed physical location is much better than the distant downtown location that we have and will provide for access and visibility from Highway 371. Last of all, there's some share for programming. Co-locating the museum enhances joint programming opportunities. As an example, the therapeutic effect of fishing provides to veterans and their families is well documented and demonstrated through many veteran fishing events held within our state. Our museum's connection in the fishing industry, as well as the celebrity we can bring with our Hall of Fame, provides for many possibilities for joint ventures in the healing as well as fundraising on behalf of both museums. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Lieutenant Colonel, thank you for your service first off, and thank you for your testimony. Any questions from the committee members? Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and probably for the author, this is going to be co-location with the Military Museum and the Fishing Museum. Is the square footage of the building, is that already set out for this co-location, or is that something that has to be done yet in terms of a plant, how large the facility has to be?
And if I could, Mr. Chair, I'll have my other testifier answer a little bit to that so he can talk about that half, and I think that will encompass Representative Detmer's question as well.
Thank you, Representative Kreshaw. Please identify yourself again and proceed.
Randall Dietrich, Executive Director of the Minnesota Military Museum at Camp Ripley. In response to the question that was posed, current estimates right now for the building is 75,000 square feet, which would accommodate both museums as well as provide us the space to accommodate other community activities as well as other things related perhaps to DNR activities or activities related to things happening on post at Camp Ripley. So our museum, the Military Museum, the Fishing Museum, and then also a space for other events to be identified are all part of this mix currently.
And, Mr. Chair, just to follow up here, according to the language in the bill, it's $26.883 million. Is that still the amount, or are we looking at, what are we looking at in reality here?
Representative Kreshaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At this point, that is the number we're at. We are still having discussions on what this would look like when we go to the capital investment, and the main reason for that is we're trying to work with the DNR. We're also trying to work with a number of other organizations because there would be educational space where we could bring in conservation officers. We could bring in veterans. We could bring in elderly and kind of get that push to get Minnesota fishing exciting again and get more out. We always hear about loss of license and so forth. So there are a lot of things that we are putting in this to make this more than just two museums. We're talking about a complex. At this point, in the groups that I've talked to, we haven't started paring down. I suspect that conversation will come, but I wouldn't have that at this point just because we're not prepared to take the number any direction.
Yeah. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe a question for Mr. DeRocher. You had mentioned earlier today when I met with you that you have some funding mechanisms for your operational cost. Is that going to continue on if you move into the new facility?
Mr. DeRozier.
Yes, sir. We currently do not receive any tax money to operate our museum. We do it through fundraising, memberships, donations. We also run a side business in charitable gaming. And so those resources would be brought with us to the new location to run a sustainment program.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kreshaw, I'm wondering if there, it is a pretty large amount. Just wondering if there's been any effort to find local matching funds, contributions from, donations or sponsorships. I think especially with fishing, there's probably some opportunities there. So I'm wondering if you can answer that.
To the testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Becker Finn. Yes, we are pursuing those avenues. I don't have commitments at this point. And just to tell you about the magnitude of this project and the excitement, we are working with all the Hall of Fame Fisher people, and we're working with groups like that. We have a number of groups that I think will start to come to the table. They've already expressed interest. We're looking at the possibility of local matching dollars because, obviously, there will be some tourism, there will be some traffic. So all of those are being explored, and yes, we want to make this go, and we know that it's going to take some type of commitment outside of the legislative appropriation.
Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would also recommend, if you haven't already, to not just talk with DNR, but also explore Minnesota. I know, you know, if you look at the fishing opener and the hunting opener, that they already have some of those relationships with potential sponsors.
Representative Kreshaw.
Funny you should say that, because we've opened those conversations, and our vision is actually, and we'll just keep this here because it's, you know, keep it between friends, right? We're hoping to have the fishing opener here in 4 to 5 years.
Representative Becker Finn.
No further questions.
Representative Kreshaw, it's been a long time since I fished in the Brainerd Lakes area, so I would look forward to an invite for that if it does happen. Yeah. I have one question. When you move things from one spot to another, how is the city of Little Falls with this potential move?
Sure.
Thank
you for the question. Actually, very supportive. The city of Little Falls has been very supportive of both Camp Ripley and the Fishing Museum and has found ways to support both of those. And they see this as an incredible boon for the area. The other thing that, since I get to do a little shameless plug, we also have a museum, or we also have a zoo, and we also have the Lindbergh State Park. And one of the things that many people don't realize about our area is the incredible amount of students that show up in buses for our resources to see, and this would be one more attraction for them. But it's absolutely amazing the amount of traffic that we get. And so, to your point, they're very excited about that, and we have their support.
All right, thank you. Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kreshaw, thank you for bringing this bill forward. I think that it's a great idea to collaborate with the fishing community and the military community, and especially in a time when we're talking about the veteran suicide rates and PTSD and the other things. I think it's real important to build those relationships and in our community and have a place for vets to hang out and civilians as well. And I guess my one question about the facility there, would there be, do you foresee some sort of an entry fee that would, for the visitors, where they would get access to that full complex?
Representative Kreshaw.
Thank you, Representative Heinrich. At this point, that hasn't been discussed. It's not in the vision. And so if there is, I don't think there would be. At this point, we'd have to see. But that has not been talked about. Right now, you can get on the Camp Ripley base for free. You can walk in. I believe the Fishing Museum has a small admissions fee. We buy a year-long pass. But, you know, so we'd have to see. I won't give you a definite one way or the other because we'll wait to get down there. But I do want to make, and do you want, I'll let you make a comment to that. But one thing I want to catch very quickly, because it's very important. When you mentioned the veterans and you mentioned the suicide rate and you mentioned all of those memories, the one thing I can't state enough about this area, if you come up there, a family could be there on Memorial Day, they could be walking through the cemetery. At the same time, like I took my father, we drove on base, and we would go to the military museum. My father was retired Navy, and to go through and to see all of the artifacts and the letters, and then I was able to read letters from the World War II, and I got a sense of what my grandfather went through. And then at the same time, all of these people have fished in their lives. And for them to also then be able to walk down memory lane, and when you're sitting there looking at the old dark houses and the old lures, it really ties all that together, and it's amazing what it does for families. And I can't state enough, unless you're actually there walking the grounds and walking and envisioning this, what it will be like for families and the multitude of generations that can come together with these shared memories. It'll be absolutely fantastic. And with that, I'll let you address the admissions fee.
Randall Dietrich. We would, I think, to answer your question, perhaps follow up on it, between the two museums, we would certainly arrange to have a flat rate to see both museums at the same time in one visit. That would be part of our vision. This kind of shared space is one that is common across the country. There's other examples of museums that do this kind of work. Given the connections that we have, we would establish, I believe, you know, a flat rate that would allow families to go through both museums at a modest rate on top of that. And from a military museum perspective, one of the things that I'm challenged with is making that divide between the civilian community and the veteran community, and exposing one and the other. And the chance to have a world-class military museum that's next to a museum that draws 1 in 3 Minnesotans participating every single year is a tremendous opportunity to expose a large percentage of the Minnesota population to what I believe is a very important veteran experience by having us both under the same roof.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, Representative Kreisha, I'll say that if you build a stadium, you get a Super Bowl. So if you build this, you certainly should be able to get the fishing opener. So this is just a quick shameless plug on something that you guys touched on that I want to sort of ask the question, but because this is about the museums. But down in Wilmer, we have a thing called Let's Go Fishing, and it might be all over Minnesota, I don't know. But I actually work closely with them, and that's designed for retired folks, right? But the therapy of fishing and everything surrounding it really, really crosses over to veterans, and I don't know what you're doing up there, but if there's some way that you could tie in that whole experience with some of the veterans and some of that sort of stuff, I think that would be sort of a powerful combination of what you're trying to accomplish here. Any thoughts on that? What's going on?
Representative Kreisha.
Thank you for the question, Representative Miller, and the comments. So, interesting enough, we both captained on Let's Go Fishing. In fact, Let's Go Fishing, when it originally got its start, came up to the fishing museum, and we had a pontoon, and that we have lost some of our volunteers and our captains because of age and many other things, so we haven't been able to sustain it. But I want to say that A is very good and therapeutic, and the amount of lives that we've touched. But the other thing that I'll add is, and many people may not be aware of this, but the Trolling for Troops and the veterans outings that come out of Camp Ripley are absolutely phenomenal. I mean, they're always running veterans out and running them through the fishing programs. And so I hope that answers your questions, but the answer is yes to all the above, and we should do much more.
Representative Miller. Representative Dittmer.
Yeah, and this should be my last question. This is for Mr. Dietrich. Maybe you've already touched on this, but what is the big plus of having the museum off campus or off the post?
Sure.
Mr. Dietrich.
Yep. The big plus is to, one, to be in proximity to the post, because the story that we want to tell includes Camp Ripley. The advantage we have of being off post is you do get beyond what some people see as the obstacle of going through the gate at Camp Ripley. So not having to pass through security, that's at least a mental obstacle for some folks. So being outside of the gate, outside of that security zone, is an advantage to draw more people more easily and have proximity to Highway 371.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Dittmer.
Thank you.
Is there any other questions from the committee? Is there anyone from the audience who cares to testify on this bill? Mr. Kerr. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members of the committee, I'm Don Kerr, the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. And I'm here to let you know that the agency that's going to actually get the appropriation is in favor of this project at some level. We do reserve the right to work with the author on some of the language in the bill. We want to clarify the Adjutant General's authority and responsibility with regard to the building moving forward and how that would all work out. But we're interested in this project because, as has been mentioned, that getting that visitor center off Camp Ripley actually meets one of our force protection requirements. And we might actually be able to bring some federal funding to the table, too, to help participate in this thing as it moves. Representative Dittmer, in answer to your question about why getting it off, We have to deal with the commander of Northern Command's guidance about force protection. We've been pretty stable, and we haven't had a lot of problems with locking down the installations. But that is a concern that we have, is should something happen that requires force protection condition to go up, basically the people of Minnesota wouldn't be able to get on Camp Ripley potentially to go to the museum in its current location. We've also got challenges in its current location in that the museum is right on the glide slope, and when the C-130s are touch and goes, they're rubbing the tires on the rooftops. The FAA is concerned about, I mean, they won't let us do any renovations in the area that increase the height of the building. So we see this as a very beneficial situation. We support strongly the museum. We like having them there, but we think getting them off would be good, and we certainly think that it's in the shape right now to move forward, and we'd work with the author on getting the language the way we'd like it to be able to fully support the bill in the future.
Any questions for Mr. Kerr? Thank you. Anybody else from the audience care to testify? Representative Kreshaw, last words in the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My final words are this. This project didn't come just because of great ideas. It became because we have to solve some problems. One of them, as you heard Mr. Carter mention, we do need to move the military museum off the encampment because of the force protection as well as some things that they need to accomplish there. We need to make sure visitors have easy access to this, as well as preserving a state, the only state fishing museum and Hall of Fame asset that was started by Al Barrett and now has continued. The other thing that we need to solve, and we've heard this in other committees, is the lack of interest in young anglers. At one point, the DNR had proposed moving the fishing museum over to the Mille Lacs area when they were going through some of their economic challenges and putting it in with the fishery, but it just didn't work. The location wasn't right. So what has really happened here is, I believe, a little bit of serendipity and maybe a little bit of divine intervention of bringing a whole bunch of good ideas together to solve some problems that, frankly, I would have had to solve one at a time for all of these entities, and this is going to allow me to do a lot of good for our area and, frankly, for the state. And so with that, I ask for your support, and thank you for the hearing, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Kreshaw. So the chair renews his motion that House File 2025 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion carries. You're on your way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Next bill up is House File 613, and that would be Representative Hewitt.
And I assume I'm accepting authors.
Oh, there he is. Okay.
Mr. Chair, can I ask you a quick
Representative
question?
Representative Miller.
Just a quick procedural question while they're getting set up. So this is going to Ways and Means in anticipation of bonding, of a bonding bill, correct? Is that kind of where, is that kind of generally where the bonding bills are going, is into Ways and Means? Just curious where they're going. Is this kind of typical of what we're seeing?
Thank you, Representative Miller, and that, yes, that is correct. It'll be re-referred from Ways and Means bonding. I just don't want to be presumptuous enough to know that that's where
no,
it's
I
going.
No, I just didn't know where they're going to sit in anticipation of bonding. I get it. Just curious. Okay,
I assume
you.
That's where it's going, Representative Miller. Where
that right, happens. But that's where bonding bills are kind of sitting in general right now, is sitting in Ways and Means. Okay,
that's correct.
Just curious. Thank you.
Chair moves that House File 613 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Hewitt, please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, and I am just honored to be in front of your group. This is my first visit, so I am asking that we pass around the treats if we could. They are fresh.
Mr. Chair, should we decide if they're acceptable enough before?
I'm just kidding. Go ahead. I assume they are, Representative Miller, so pass them around.
They're store-bought.
Please proceed.
So House File 613 is a appropriation for our armory in Rosemount. I can't tell you how proud we are to have the Red Bull in Rosemount. Right now they're actually on deployment. And these have been a great neighbor. The armory is located right by our high school. It seems like we share the facilities really well together. It isn't a given time on a weekend that you can't see them running around our track or playing football on our football field. But we really enjoy them as neighbors, and I'm very honored to bring this proposal to you. And with me today is our individual here from the, you can introduce yourself.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Again, I'm Don Kerr, the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs, and this is one of our two bonding projects that's in the governor's plan as well. So this is one of the standalone bills. We appreciate very much the opportunity to speak here in the committee for this bill. It has already been heard in capital investment, as a matter of fact, as part of the governor's project, but I did provide a handout to you that has some of the details on the bill and conveniently also has the other project that I think has been dropped and will probably be coming before the committee at some point in the future for your consideration for the Fergus Falls Armory. But Rosemount's very important to us. It's one of our first really big armories. It's not particularly old, 28 years old right now. By the time we would get this construction done, it would be 30 years old. That's important because that's typically how long a roof lasts and how long a boiler lasts, and that's why we're getting into this particular facility. This one has some additional challenges in that it's got, it does not have a fire alarm system that's connected to the fire department. It does not have an emergency notification system in the building that's now required by code. It's got some very inefficient HVAC systems that if we update those HVAC systems and windows, we can make significant savings over the long term to make the building more sustainable. And from a timing perspective, this is important because as Representative Hewitt mentioned, 34th Division is currently deployed. They're coming home in July. they'll move back into this building. But we're currently building a new facility in Arden Hills, specifically for the division, a $39 million facility, 100% federally funded, that will open in 2020. And it's our desire to move the division from their old headquarters into their new headquarters in 2020, and then renovate that building before we backfill our first brigade of the 34th Division into that building, so that we can do that renovation without having to move units twice. We also have had to try to get the timing synchronized because the city of Rosemont is also in the building with us, and there are implications when we do upgrades to the HVAC system in our half of the building and not theirs. So we do have this worked out with the city so that they're able to do their portion of the renovation at the same time, and they have the funds available to do that. So timing is critical for us on this thing, and that's why we've got this bonding proposal before the committee here and capital investment down the road. And with that, I would stand for any questions that you might have.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Chair, I just want to say for the record that I'm sure that we'll get strong support in here, but as this moves up the chain, that we can have strong support. Our military certainly deserves facilities that are adequate, and I can tell you from being on the bonding committee the last couple of years that our military, our National Guard, our military affairs here really uses their dollars. They optimize the dollars and use them very efficiently for the facilities that they're building. And so I certainly hope, and I was impressed with the, we had a big presentation last year, if you remember, and I was impressed with their attitude towards this stuff. And if they say they need this, they really need it. And so I hope that we can make sure this gets in. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Miller. Any other questions for the testifiers? Anybody from the audience wish to testify for or against this bill? Representative Hewitt, final last words.
Mr. Chair, committee, I think it's a great bill. Like I said, we enjoy these folks as neighbors, and they're a really big part of our community. Please consider the bill for to move it forward. Thank you.
All right, thank you. The chair renews his motion that House File 613 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say nay. Motion carries. I say, Representative Hewitt, you don't have to go far. House File 1740. Chair moves that House File 1740 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Hewitt, please proceed.
Once again, Mr. Chair and Committee, thank you for hearing my bill today. This truly was a bill that I thought of during the campaign and thought I should take it forward here. It has a lot of special meaning to me as I am a Gold Star family member. In 1970, I came home from kindergarten one day, was sitting in the living room. We just read my mother's birthday card. She went out to make me lunch, and a knock occurred at the door. As a five-year-old, you run to the door, you get it. And the soldier looked at me and said, I need to talk to your mother. Our life was changed from that day forward. I lost a brother in Vietnam. The next day to that funeral, all I remember is being at the cemetery at Fort Snelling, listen to the soldiers shoot their guns, and a flag that was given to my mom on behalf of the President of the United States. I could never understand from that point why she didn't vote for Nixon. Why wouldn't you vote for the president that gave you a flag, Mom? But it meant so much to us, and here it is here today, my brother's flag. And it said something to me as I was really upset with myself that I couldn't serve because it was not acceptable in my family to serve at that point. We lost one. They didn't want to lose another one. And so I ended up in EMS and fire. And, you know, we have a lot of things that we use in the same situation when we're serving the public in a different manner. And I thought, as I've seen colleagues die in the line of duty with police officers, and I've lost a few firefighter friends and a few EMS friends, I thought we should do something here in the state of Minnesota. This meant so much to me, and I know it would mean something to a family if we were to use the flag on top of the Capitol just to, as a momentum from the state and from the legislators and from the governor, that we want to thank them for their service. And I want to put a little bit more emphasis to it. I want to go backwards in time. I'd like to be able to make this available to all of our soldiers that were killed in the line of duty and all of our duty deaths, all the way back to World War II. As you can see, the fiscal note's in there on that, and it's an approximate, and I actually want to cut it in half, and I want to turn it into a grant program. I think that would be the best way to work this, because we really don't know the numbers on this yet. And I also want to open it up So we got a little bit of work to do on this bill yet before it goes on to the next committee, before it hits the next committee. I also want to open it up for donations. So I think this is a good bill. I think it has a good meaning, and I think it would be a good way for us to say thank you to those that have put themselves forward in Minnesota for us. Today I have with me a very special friend from the Honor Guard, EMS Honor Guard, and I'm going to let him talk to you a little bit about what where we're going with this.
Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, Committee, my name is Brad Johnson. I'm the Executive Officer of the Minnesota EMS Honor Guard. I'm also one of the co-founders of the Minnesota EMS Honor Guard, which was founded in 2002. I served 6 years in the Marine Corps. I spent 13 years as a firefighter EMT, and I spent 25 years as a paramedic. Obviously, I've served my time. I can tell you, Representative Hoyt's bill here is of a very dignified way to honor somebody. I can tell you I've been to my share of line-of-duty death funerals, both for paramedics, EMTs, police officers, and firefighters. As much as it is appreciated that the governor, the public safety commissioner, and all representatives that can show up to pay their respects, there is nothing more than when I have presented a flag to the wife, the mother, the father, the brother, the sister, than it is to present that flag on behalf of the Honor Guard in the state of Minnesota. And I think what a more even honorable way to tell that family that this flag has flew above the state capitol and represented that individual that made the ultimate sacrifice for their citizens. So I hope that this committee will honor Representative Hewitt's request and move this out of committee, and hopefully it'll become voted upon.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Hewitt, do you have any other testifiers?
No, I do not. The department is here, but we were actually talked before this, and we're going to work on the amendment going forward, so unless they want to talk.
Great. Thank you. Is there any questions from the committee? Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And looking at the bill, you're also talking about U.S. flags and the Minnesota flag, and one is given at no cost. Could you explain that?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer. Not the Minnesota flag. This would be just the U.S. flag that flies on top of the Capitol. The Minnesota flag right now is actually, we looked into that program, and the fire department has something with that. But this is basically one flag that's given. The U.S. flag that flies over the Capitol is one that would be earmarked for this. One flag would be what the state gives. If the family requests others, they would have to pay for them, but one flag for a family. Did that answer the question, Mr.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, in line 1.18, the department administration to provide either a Minnesota state flag or American flag that is flown over the Minnesota state capitol. So is that the way you want your language?
Representative Hewitt.
Mr. Chair Representative Breyer, no. We will correct that also. Thank you for catching that.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Detmer.
And Mr. Chair, I'm just looking at another, the fiscal note, looks like 11,000 for 500 flags, and so that's $24.95 each, and then, or 250 of each, okay. And that includes the U.S. flags and the Minnesota flags.
Representative Hewitt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dittmeyer.
I'm just looking at the fiscal note, Mr. Chair.
Yep, I see it. And again, we're going to change this to a full amount of, I went to the first page. What I'm going to ask for is a grant of around $30,000 for the biennium, And once that runs out, it's out, and we'll decide at that point if we want to continue the program. That's what I'm going to change it out to. This was, even the people, they called down several times and said there's no way to predict what this will be. And the best way to do this is through a grant right now to see if we want to do the program at all.
And Mr. Chair, this is a good program. I'm sure before your next committee, you'll have that squared away.
Thank you.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you.
Any other? Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not exactly sure who this question is for. I was just wondering if somebody here knew the process of when a flag, when the flags do come down off the state capitol, if that's a weekly occurrence when those flags are stored somewhere, if there's a ceremony when those flags are taken down and folded up, and kind of how that works. I don't know if there's anybody in the room that can answer that question.
Representative Heinrich, looks like we have a phone a friend coming in. So,
Mr. What was your first name?
Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Representative, Mr. Chair, this is Chris Givens from the department. And Chris, go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us about your background.
Welcome, Mr. Givens.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Christopher Givens. I am the Director of Facilities Management, which is part of the Department of Administration. And we operate and maintain the Capitol Complex, of which this building is part of. And we also, as part of that, raise and lower the flags each day and maintain the proper protocol for the flags on the Capitol complex. So to answer your question, as part of the restoration on this particular building, we had lights installed on the poles so they can stay up 24/7 now, which is was a change as part of that restoration. Otherwise, on the rest of the complex, the flags would come down at night. We also take the flags down during inclement weather, high wind warnings, and, of course, to replace them as they become tattered. In the case of flying, we would raise them up and bring them back down to honor that request. So that can still be done. They're fully operational flagpoles, but we've got the privilege or the benefit now of having full staff and half staff lighting on the poles. So we can accommodate any requests.
Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sir, is there currently folded flags in storage, so to speak, for future?
At this time, no. Typically, the way we fly, and I do have a statement. I would like to read that statement, and we'll get into that. But the way that the flag program works now is people will, and we probably fly 25 to 30 flags a month. Most of them are the colors, the U.S. flag. But we do get several requests for Minnesota flags. And typically the individuals, or all the time, the individuals bring the flags in. They are paid for. They own the flags. We fly them for them. We do not supply the flags for individuals or groups that want to have flags flown. They supply those. This would be a little different where now we would be supplying the flag for the deceased in the line of duty. Family member.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Detmer.
What size flag is required to be flown?
4x6.
4x6.
Are the flags that we fly on the Capitol itself. And so those would be the flags that we would present to the families.
Sir.
Again, Chairman, Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Brad Johnson. Just to let you know, the honor guard, somebody asked who would fold the flags or whatever. Once, generally speaking, what we do is we've notified the public safety director of a line of duty death, i.e. police officer, firefighter, paramedic, EMT. That public safety director or duty officer generally would contact this gentleman here then and let him know that we've had a line of duty death and the family is requesting a flag. We would make arrangements so once that flag has flown on the Capitol to receive it from them, and the honor guard, whether it be Lima, our EMS honor guard, or the fallen firefighters, we would fold that flag and present it to the family.
Thank you. Ms. Given, you had a comment that you wanted to make?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I do have a statement just to talk about the bill a little bit and some of the things we need to see to be worked out to make it effective. So
please proceed.
If I may. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. The Department of Administration Facilities Management Division operates and maintains the Capitol Complex. And as part of that effort, we raise, lower, and care for the flags here to ensure proper protocol. We also fly flags for individuals and groups upon request, provided that they supply the flags for us to fly. We fully support the concept of a Capitol flag program. We'd be honored to fly the flags of the United States and Minnesota for those who have fallen in the line of duty. As a retired Air Force officer, I understand the significance and poignancy that flying our national and state flags over the Capitol building in remembrance of someone has. However, we believe there are some logistical challenges with the proposed bill in its current form. First, the Department of Administration Facilities Management Division does not have the means or expertise to make in-the-line-of-duty determinations. Second, the Department of Administration Facilities Management Division does not have the means to verify whether in-the-line-of-duty claims made by the requesters to fly the flags are bona fide. Eligible operations and services for in-the-line-of-duty determination range from the active-duty U.S. military, the National Guard, public safety, corrections, local law enforcement, local first responders, volunteer fire departments, private ambulance and rescue services, and Good Samaritans. And it could be very difficult to determine the validity of many of the claims. Third, the Department of Administration does not have the means to verify whether or not non-spousal requesters are actually eligible family members, especially when they do not bear the same name. I bring these up because these challenges will make it difficult to fully ensure that state funds are used as intended. Finally, we are uncertain of the cost for the Capitol Flag Flying Program, as there is no way to estimate how many eligible family members of the thousands of Minnesotans who have died in the line of duty will make to have a flag flown over the Capitol. So in order for the program to work, we need confirmation from other agencies, because we're just the flag flyers here, and government entities when somebody has in fact died in the line of duty, and it should be supplied to the person making the request for the flag to be flown. We'll be happy to work with the author of this bill to make the adjustments, because certainly we are proud to serve and honor those individuals. So, you know, we can work things out, but there are just some clarity on our part because of our limited capabilities here in facilities management to make those determinations. And because it is state money, we're going to have to be accountable for that. And so we need to make sure that when we hand these flags out, that they are indeed going to eligible members, because we could be audited. So that's all I wanted to say, Mr. Chair and committee.
Thank you, Mr. Gibbon. Any other questions from the committee members? Anybody else from the audience care to testify for or against this bill? Representative Hewitt, last words.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. As you can see, I have a little bit of work to do, and I'm willing to do that. We've identified the agencies already in the concerns that he had in the bill. I think we are off to a good start. If this gets sent back to Ways and Means and dispatched to where it has to go, we will be ready for that committee. This is a pretty we needed to get it before a committee, and this did exactly what we wanted it to do, and it brought out the people that had to be the stakeholders here. So thank you very much for hearing it, and I think you will be amazed with the program once we get it launched.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Chair renews his motion that House File 1740 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same nay. Motion carries. House File 1471.
It's okay.
I think that's next in line.
I was ready.
Representative Bierman. Chair moves the House File 1471 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Bierman, please. We almost had Representative Heinrich testify on this bill. Representative Bierman, please proceed with your testimony.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Thank you for hearing and giving me the opportunity to share House File 1471. This is a proposal to set history straight by recognizing all Minnesota veterans who served in World War I by correcting a dedicated memorial plaque. The plaque is located on the Capitol grounds in the Court of Honor. Unfortunately, the current plaque does not recognize all Minnesotans who served. Here today to provide a bit more detail on the researched history, we have with us Chaplain David Thompson, United States Navy retired and son of the late Arnie Thompson, World War I veteran from Painesville, Minnesota.
Chaplain Thompson, welcome. Thank you for service. Please identify your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is David Thompson. I'm a retired Navy chaplain and son of a Minnesota World War I U.S. Army veteran. My dad was born in 1897, so I'm one of the last folks that are still around of that generation. But I wanted to speak to this sort of by telling you maybe a story that sort of may be helpful. Back in 2013, I passed the World War I Memorial down at the Circle of Honor on the State Capitol grounds here, and read the simple and very brief description. It said, dedicated to the 57,113 Minnesotans who so gallantly served in the war to end all wars. It immediately became apparent to me that those numbers on the Minnesota World War I Memorial were incorrect, when in fact 118,497 Minnesotans served in World War I, with the inscription excluding 61,084 Minnesota veterans who served in the war that didn't pass muster, basically, on that memorial. Most likely, I assumed that they were basically non-AEF veterans, who had served in convoy duty in the Navy across the Atlantic. They were also 2.7 million soldiers, sailors, and Marines who were still on training bases in the United States when the war ended. Just happened to be my dad was one of those. I share that story when I was a little boy. I asked my dad after my friends bragged about their World War II service in, or their Korean War service to me, I asked him, what did you do in World War I? And all he would answer is, I survived the flu. Well, that's not much of a story to bring back to my friends. And talked about when they were talking about all the bravery their father was going through. Later on, however, my dad did tell me the rest of the story. He was a World War I soldier at Camp Dodge, Iowa, when the 1918 flu pandemic struck in September of 1918, infecting 25% of the 13,000 troops in camp there and killed 702 soldiers. He told me he was detailed to be part of a group of soldiers to prepare bodies for shipment home when he was also felled by the flu, but he survived to tell about it and return home on Christmas Eve of 1918. For many years after my father's passing in 1962, I didn't think about my dad's World War I story with this battle with disease which raged among our forces. I learned later in the fall of 1918 that disease, largely this pandemic, killed in 3 months 22,000 AEF soldiers, and it also killed 36,000 soldiers and sailors in the United States. That is, in essence, almost equal to the number of soldiers that were killed in the Korean War in its entirety of 3 years, just in 3 months. So it must have been a horrific, horrific experience. Most troops died in the United States in that sense, and it was the largest number of American servicemen to die in wartime in the United States since the Civil War. Yet most of them were excluded on our World War I memorials and largely forgotten in our history books for over a century. World War I, however, was more than talking about disease. It was a war. And it was a fierce and deadly combat in France with a 2 million man AEF force against the German army. This effort was not without costs for Minnesotan servicemen, with 4,480 wounded and 1,432 soldiers, sailors, and Marines killed in action trying to secure victory for our country. American soldiers and Marines entered the front lines in France in January of 1918 and were caught in fierce battles in places like Belle Wood, Cantigny, Chateau Thierry and the Meuse-Argonne in the last 6 months of the war, experiencing a higher casualty rate than our soldiers in World War II. The AEF suffered 53,000 battle deaths roughly in about 6 months. That's equal to almost all of the soldiers that were killed in the Vietnam War in a 10-year period. This was done in 6 months. You can imagine the compression of this. The AEF, they also suffered 22,000 who died due to the flu. Three Minnesota nurses, Army nurses, lost their lives tending to flu victims in the AEF in over in France during that time. The 151st Field Artillery, the Minnesota National Guard, served with distinction in combat in France with the 42nd Rainbow Division. And many more Minnesotans served with the 88th Division in combat, along with still others serving in various others AEF combat units during the war. A lot of this stuff is all forgotten by our people now, 100 years later. These AEF soldiers from Minnesota took the battle of the enemy in a bloody conflict in France. It is my contention they should be honored along with those that died here back home, memorialized in this Minnesota World War I memorial. All Minnesota veterans who answer the call of service deserve our honor and respect with a proper and accurate memorial that helps us remember their deeds and service to our country and our state. It's my hope that we can, with HF 1471, create an inclusive memorial that honors all 118,497 Minnesota World War I veterans who served at home and abroad in World War I, as well as honor all of the 3,607 Minnesota veterans who made the supreme sacrifice in the Great War. As a Minnesota veteran and a son of a Minnesota World War I veteran, as well as a retired military chaplain, concerned that we honor all those who served and died in World War I, I deeply appreciate your consideration and your support of HF 1471. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Any questions for the testifiers? Representative Detmer.
Quick one there, Mr. Chair. And what's going to happen to the old plaque?
Good question. Basically, the old plaque will be changed to basically be inclusive of that. I've talked with a Capitol architect, and as far as, you know, there will be a committee that will be assigned to basically talk about the wording of it and what goes on along with the, you know, the military department, and really come up with something like that. And then it'll be by donations that we basically will fund it. And we already have a capital architect here. I'll get out of your way here.
It's always nice when we have the phone a friend. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Paul Mandel, Executive Secretary for the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board. This is not the first plaque that has been replaced. The Bataan Death March was incorrectly cast, and years later, it was in 2001, it was replaced. My understanding is that the old plaque is in the basement in storage of the Veterans Service Building. This plaque would also be stored and either recycled or I understand from the Historical Society that they do not have a need for it. The new plaque would be then recast in bronze, and the wording would be reviewed by both the Veterans Affairs and CAP Board.
Thanks, sir. Thank Representative Detmer.
Thank you. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. Oh, Representative Brand, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So to Mr. Mandel, former city council member, we used to do RFPs and try to take, you know, the best price, that sort of thing. What's the process there? I mean, do we have a sculptor on staff, or how does this get cast in bronze?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the cost of these plaques is pretty much set now. It's roughly $5,000. The client group would work with both the CAP Board and the Veterans Affairs to commission the piece. It's pretty much straightforward, that as long as we make sure it's inclusive and addresses the need in this case. More recently, we have gotten into some artwork. The Native American plaque that's down there, they actually got quite fancy, and they did interpretive letters and characters representative of the Native American symbols and such. But usually it's a pretty straightforward wording, and we just make sure it's sensitive to the needs, first of all, meets all the needs, and addresses all the concerns.
Okay. Mr. Brad?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one follow-up. Maybe a friendly amendment. I'm not sure how to word this or what, but maybe we make sure that it's a Minnesota artist that gets this job?
I believe it is, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Yep. Thank you. And one final, any other questions from the committee? One final word. I did talk to Mr. Keller before prior to this on this thing, and he said the Minnesota Historical Society just needs this info documented. on the old plaque, but they do not need the plaque itself for their storage. So, anybody from the audience care to testify for or against this bill? Final words, Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and the committee for hearing the bill today, and just hopeful that we can get this done this year. This has been on the in the works for a few sessions now, so we hopefully won't have to bring Mr. Thompson back up here next year. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Bierman. The chair renews his motion that House File 1471 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Representative Detmer, I've got Representative Brand ahead of you, so we'll just keep following. Since I screwed the schedule up already, and for committee members, just so you know, we've got two bills left, and we've reserved the room till 5 o'clock. I don't think we'll need that much time, but we'll get through this. House File 731, Representative Brand.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
Representative Brand, would you care to move your bill to be referred to the Committee on Taxes?
Yes, I would like to ask that it be referred. Okay. I would move the bill. So House File 730,
Paul says that we got to change the motion to refer it to Ways and Means.
Oh, yes, sorry.
Please proceed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So House File 731 does a variety of things that benefits folks that have 100% exemption because of disability, because of their service in war. And so the first thing it does, it exempts the Watercraft license fee for veterans. Second thing it does is it excludes the title fees for Watercraft. Third thing it does is it exempts a wheelage tax for motor vehicles. A vehicle registered for certain veterans as well. So if a vehicle, private passenger, one-ton truck, motorcycle, recreational vehicle registered by a veteran with a total service-connected disability, the fees would be waived on that as well. There's an exemption for vehicles for veterans that pay the state application fees. Veterans with a total service-connected disability for the purposes of a new vehicle registration, exemption for fees for driver's license, Watercraft purchase, and then also there's an exemption for a total service-connected disability for a motor vehicle tax. And so this bill does a variety of things. I know this has not the first time that the House or the Senate has heard a bill similar to this. This one is a little different than Representative Lean had a few years back. I believe it was last year, actually. His bill did not include Watercraft, but I feel confident, especially after hearing Representative Kreisha's testimony about the fishing museum, that that does provide an opportunity for veterans to get reconnected to nature. It does provide an opportunity for veterans to be, there's a benefit for the therapy of being out in the outdoors. And I believe we're a state that has a legacy of being in the outdoors with water, craft and fishing and that sort of thing. It is only right that we do our best to get our veterans back out there. And so today I have a couple of friends that I'd like to have testify, Jerry Kaiser and then also Tom McLaughlin from St. Peter. So we'll start with Jerry Kaiser and then we'll talk to Tom.
Welcome back, Mr. Kaiser. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Jerry Kaiser. I'm chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council. And as a disabled veteran, this enables many veterans who are not able to have the opportunity to use Watercraft and other vehicles that they might be able to be in the outdoors. This enables them to then be part of what they were before they got disabled in what particular manner it is, especially with vehicles. The current veterans coming back from the current wars with the IEDs is much more of parts of their torso that are gone and that enables them to be able to enjoy the outdoors as where they wouldn't before. We think this is an opportunity then for the state of Minnesota to help them get back into what they were before. So instead of taking away a greater part of their life, a lot of them from all parts of Minnesota certainly are, should be able to enjoy the same things that the rest of us can.
Thank you, Mr. Kaiser. Welcome, sir. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members, for serving on this important committee. I'm Tom McLaughlin. I'm close to St. Peter. I'm in Mankato. I'm here today to testify in favor of this particular bill. Just let me tell you real briefly a little bit about myself and one of the reasons I'm here taking this bill, testifying on this bill. And it's kind of personal to me. I am a disabled veteran. I'll tell you a little bit about that, but I am a retired city council member, Blue Earth County commissioner, and retired member of the National Legislative Committee for the Veterans of Foreign Wars. I served 11 months in combat in Vietnam. If you all remember the Tet Offensive of 1968, I was leading a squad of Marines and was wounded in action and left for dead by the enemy. As one would think, being a Marine and knowing the Marine Corps, the flicker of life that was still in me stayed burning, and the Marines did find me, and that's why I'm here today, after 8 months in the hospital. I was discharged in September of 1968 from Philadelphia Naval Hospital after 8 months of treatment. As a result of my four gunshot wounds, I lost my left leg above the knee. And I am entitled to a fiduciary award from the Department of Veterans Administration because of the loss of a limb or loss of use of a limb. And most 100% veterans are not in that category where they receive this award and they are waived the state fees, the state license fees, and the state taxes. I've been fortunate in the fact that for the last 50 years I've been able to have that privilege. I know many, many other veterans who are 100%, who have become 100% directly from their service connection, who are not missing a limb or have lost the use of a limb and do not get the waiver on the sales tax or licensing on their vehicle. The inclusion of recreational vehicles is very important because when people come home, especially seriously wounded, they tend to drift. I know that coming home in 1968 to a nation that was at war with itself. I went underground for 10 years, and that 10 years pretty near did what the enemy could not do. But I did survive it, and I found recovery. I've been 41 years in recovery now, so I know the importance of having interests and things that you can afford to do when you're discharged and you're not the same physical person that you went in. That's why I believe that anything we can do for our veterans who are 100% to get them interested right away so they don't drift off in that first critical period when they get out of the hospital is very important. And I know sales tax on a motor vehicle or a boat may not make or break most of us, but if a person is living on just their disability alone, it's a hardship that we could waive for them so they could get interest and they could get out and enjoy the great state of Minnesota and the things we have to offer here in boats or ATVs or other vehicles. So I'm in favor of this bill, and if you have any questions for me, I'd certainly answer them.
Thank you, Ms. McLaughlin, and thank you for your service. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Brand, a couple questions. This next place has to stop is taxes, right?
I believe, Representative Miller, it will be re-referred taxes, but it's going to Ways and Means first.
Okay. So assuming it goes to taxes, Representative Brand, you'll have a revenue note on these things available at that time?
Certainly.
Representative Brand.
In fact, there's a fiscal note that has already been provided to this committee.
I didn't see it. I'm sorry.
Representative Brand, it's not in our package. So.
All right. Well, yes. So it's approximately, I've got it over to my desk there. I could run over and grab it, or I could share it with you later on.
Just catch up with a copy if you could.
Yep, absolutely. There is a fiscal note. In fact, I've got an electronic copy of it, which I can email to everybody and no one as well. There is a cost to that, obviously. As I said before in the previous the committee hearing, the fiscal note takes into consideration every World War II veteran and every other veteran in the spectrum of veterans in Minnesota purchasing a vehicle, buying a boat, doing everything at the same time. Well, we know that we don't all renew our license every year at the same time, you know, and we don't all renew our, or I should say, our driver's license at the same time. And also, I should point out that not every World War II veteran is going to go out and buy a new car and a new boat every year. So although the fiscal note is what we have to go off of, I still argue it's a worst-case scenario in terms of the cost, but I believe it's in the neighborhood of about $1 million per year.
Mr. Chair. Representative Miller.
Okay, thank you. First of all, I think this is fine. I'm totally supportive on this. I just was curious where that was at. And then a couple of these are local revenues. You have the wheelage tax and you have sales tax on that. So I don't know if it's a question or maybe a statement. We'll figure out by the time we're done with this. But you'll certainly want to make sure that you get the support of whether it's AMC or it's, I guess in this case, it would be maybe the cities or something like that. I can't believe the numbers are really big dollar amounts, but they might be, but they might have an opinion on that. So just because I think the execution of this is going to have to get down to that local level as well. So maybe some more concerns of, I am supportive of this, but I think that's some of the things that will have to be figured out with this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Brand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Miller, yes, it is worth considering, that's for sure. You'd rather have more allies than enemies, especially with we talk about legislation. So I have reached out to them, I haven't heard back yet. But I do know there are a variety of veterans that live in my district that are behind this bill. So I know we've got the support of veterans. And I think it is worth pointing out that Mr. McLaughlin and I were walking over here today, and he had said a comment that I think bears for us to repeat, and he made a point about the 42 years ago when he came back from Vietnam War, there was a sales tax exemption for veterans, and that had been eroded since. So this is a way to kind of restore something that at one point in the state of Minnesota was given to veterans. And so I think that that is also worth considering. I understand that everybody wants to get as much tax revenue as possible because we all have roads and bridges and things like that to pay for, but by the same token, I still think that our veterans are a special class of folks in our community, and I think they should be given special status because of the pursuit of going to a foreign war and coming back and all of the horrific things that they've gone through as well as the heroic things they've gone through. And I think that this is a small token of thanks for those folks to come back to our communities and be a part of those communities.
Sure, Mr. Chair, just one final thing. Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And absolutely, Representative Brand, that's why I support this. I think you stated it, and I think everyone's supportive here. Mm-hmm. There's just going to be some technical things that sometimes seem simpler than they sure end up being. So just to make sure that this doesn't get tangled up along the way, only because you have different revenues to different government bodies. I don't think it's a problem. I don't think anyone's going to be against it. It just is. Probably especially the wheelage tax, because that's kind of its own separate little beast right there. I would just make sure that you can get that figured out in advance. That'd be great.
Endeavor.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Reps and Brand. Good bill. And Mr. McLaughlin, thank you for your service. And just the numbers I got is we have about 8,200 100% disabled veterans in Minnesota. And taking a look at the fiscal impact, the fiscal note showed an anticipated cost of about $709,000 in 2020, $151,000 in 2021, and $151,000 each year in the tails. So that's what we're looking at. Of that amount, I know the DNR has their costs about $66,000 in 2020, $31,000 in 2021, and then each year in the tails. And then the Department of Public Safety costs
would be about $643,000 in 2020, $120,000 in 2021, and each year in the tails. So that's what the current fiscal note states. And the next stop would be transportation, I would assume, after Ways and Means.
Representative Brand.
That would be a consideration. Taxes is where this will go and will land. It was in Environment and Natural Resources Policy Committee, and then it made it stop here. So actually, when we think about where it would go next, at one point I had heard GovOps and ended up here. So I know there's maybe an interesting path for this bill, but I'm hopeful that it gets to the process where it needs to go before deadline.
Well, Mr. Chair, that's why they call it Ways to Be Mean.
Absolutely.
Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my original question was kind of answered there, but I wanted to say, Representative Brand, I'm on GovOps and transportation, so maybe I'll see you a couple more times here, possibly. I just wanted a point of clarification. I guess the word veteran got used a few times, and I just wanted to make the point that this is only 100% service-connected disability veterans. So if somebody had a 90% service-connected, they would not qualify for any of these exemptions. Is that correct?
Representative Brand.
Mr. Chair, Representative Heinrich, that is absolutely correct. It is only for 100% disabled veterans connected with a service disability.
Any other questions from the committee? Anybody from the audience care to testify on this bill? Come on up. It's not often we get the DNR at the Veterans Committee, so welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Laura Preuss. I'm a manager with the Department of Natural Resources, Parks and Trails. I'm also a daughter of a 96-year-old World War II veteran. I'd like to share information from DNR and be brief on this. DNR has a number of ways that we're supportive of veterans, including being a Yellow Ribbon organization. And in appreciation and support of our veterans, DNR extends a number of outdoor recreation benefits. We have a number of benefits related to fishing licenses, hunting licenses, as well as state park passes. And so these are really great existing programs. The licenses are a little bit different than the legislation here in that they're generally connected to an individual person versus, say, a watercraft that can be used by many people. And I think the main point simply we want to make here, we're very supportive of connecting people to the outdoors and fishing. And at the same time, we simply want the committee to be aware as it relates to the fiscal impact that we have a concern about the revenue impact to the water recreation account, particularly because that's in projected deficit. And so we simply wanted to call that to the committee's attention, the concern about the revenue related to that account that's projected deficit. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Representative Heinrich.
I guess I'll take this. I don't know if it's for DNR. Appreciate your testimony, but just something I thought of during your testimony there, maybe for Representative Brand, is there any concern over, I could see how maybe this could set up a scenario where you have a straw buyer, you know, somebody that does have 100% disability and then they, you know, purchase things and, you know, being able to not pay sales tax on a large boat might be a pretty substantial number. Just, I guess, to throw out one concern there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, something I actually hadn't considered. What I would say that I don't know that if the you know, $500 or $1,000 you'd save on a boat purchase is worth the crime and the time involved if they were ever caught for doing something like that. I think there are prohibitions against that in tax code, but I would defer to House research if they had any information. If not, I could do a little bit of investigation on that for you.
Research has no comment, Representative Brand, so if you could check into that, we'd appreciate that.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Representative Miller.
Yeah, I would argue this scenario, I think he has a valid point to check into this because let's say my brother is 100% disabled, he qualifies for this, and he purchases a boat. And we have cabins on the same lake, or maybe two different lakes. A year later, I buy it from him. You can't really say that I can't buy the boat from him. So, you know, now granted, there's some sales tax involved in that, but I think this is not anything that's going to take this down, but I think it's probably worthy of conversation because I think you're going to hear this question again, probably by tax as well.
Thank you, Representative Miller. Representative Wren.
Mr. Chair, Representative Miller, what I would say to that is this process is only to make the bill stronger in some cases, and so I appreciate the help.
Any other questions? Last words, Representative Brand.
It's a good bill.
I like short and sweet. Representative Brand removes his motion that House File 731 be re-referred to Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Representative Deppmer, House File 1773.
I'm coming down today. Or coming up today, I should say.
Thank you.
Representative Deppmer, would you like to move your bill to
yes.
be re-referred to Ways
yes.
and Means?
Yes, that's correct. I would like to move the House File 1773 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Representative Deppmer. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I think we're kind of on our last leg of this project. We've started this back a couple years ago, and the Medal of Honor construction project that we started with a gentleman coming into my office, and he's sitting right over there, Mr. Kramer. And he came into my office and he said, I'm from Stillwater, Minnesota, and I've been in charge of the Stillwater Veterans Memorial Project. And he said, I think we should have a Medal of Honor construction project here at the Capitol, on the Capitol grounds. And I just sat and listened. I said, okay, let's see what we can do. Well, now we're sitting in the last leg of the funding for this project. We've already had the groundbreaking ceremony, and now we're on the last leg to actually get the construction going. And just for some background, I think most of you here that have been around the military, the Medal of Honor medal is the highest and most prestigious personal military decoration that a person in the military can receive. And according to the Medal of Honor, we have about 70, we have 72 Medal of Honor recipients here in Minnesota. And in 2016, the legislature approved construction of the Medal of Honor memorial on the state capitol grounds under the main entrance of the Veterans Service Building. And all the Medal of Honor values and the values that leave our legacy and our path. And with me today, I'm Mr. Mandel with the CAP board, would like to share his involvement in this project.
Welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Paul Mandel, Executive Secretary for the Capitol Area Architectural and Planning Board. We have shepherded through the design competition, and I believe you have packets that show the design, the selected design. Right now, we are almost two-thirds, three-fourths of the way to funding the $750,000 project, which includes money for a maintenance fund. $250,000 plus of that has been raised through private donations. Once we are just about to the point now where we are starting the design contract with the team of HGA, that'll be about a 4 to 6 month project, and then we'll have construction initiated. The money that we are looking at today, along with another $150,000 from the private sector, would put us over the top and allow us to finish the project. Part of the CAP board's requirement whenever we do a memorial is to require a 20% of construction budget line item in the private fundraising for a maintenance fund. This is for the extraordinary circumstances, not the day-to-day things that plant management and others take care of. So we are well on the way. This would be a huge help to get us there.
Thank you, Mr. Mandel.
And Mr. Chair, we have Tiffany Kowalski here. That's she's the vice chair of the project, and she has some things to say, too.
Welcome, Ms. I'm glad Representative Detmer said your name first because I'm going to blow it, but welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am Tiffany Kowaleski, co-chair of the Minnesota Medal of Honor Memorial. Thank you for having us here again today. I can't tell you what a feat it is to raise funds for a memorial, especially one that is as altruistic as this one. Some memorials you can put your name on, your corporation on, you can buy a brick, you can put a bench next to it, but this is standing at the forefront of the Capitol grounds, directly underneath the Veterans Services Building. It's all-weather purpose servicing for any event at the mall here, and it's really just a pivotal memorial considering that it is a multi-generational memorial. John Kramer is here today. He is the tortoise to my hair, so I don't know how we get things accomplished. He moves a little bit at a slower pace, and I'm running circles around him, but together we're the most amazing team. My daughter's actually calling me right now, so she's home from school. That's great. So John is saying that there are veterans within this state, and there are Medal of Honor recipients within the state and their families. And I'm saying that there are children within this state that also need to understand who has served for their state and for their country. So this, if you have read the packet, I know that we are short on time today, or you want to be and you want to get out of here. I highly recommend reading this information here because it is one of the most beautiful multi-generational memorials here on the Capitol grounds, utilizing the existing promise of youth. So as of right now, fundraising is very hard because of the not being able to put any names on it. With the Medal of Honor Convention coming in, with the Super Bowl coming in, with the Final Four coming in, you name it, I mean, the governor's race, it's really hard to get private, public companies, you name it, to fund something like this. But with this added appropriation, it will really push us and leverage new sponsorships to match these funds. We had success with that, and we feel as though that we'll have more success if we were able to gain this appropriation. I'll just give you a couple of exact numbers. As of right now, we're at $532,047 raised, which leaves us with a balance minus $750, and I'm trying to figure out what we're at $682 with this. So we would have $68,000 left to raise within the private sector, which we are extremely confident that we can do. And pending any questions, that's all I have, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kowaleski, and thank you. It sounds like you're doing a fine job of raising money. It looks like you'll get there. Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does this appropriation require a non-state match? $150,000 appropriation.
Ms. Kowaleski, or Representative Detmer.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Any other questions from the committee? Anybody from the audience? I'm sorry, Representative Miller. Go ahead.
I have one follow-up, Mr. Chair, if that's all right.
Representative Heinrich.
I just have one other quick question. It's authorized appropriation of this, just in a summary here, I got authorized as appropriation of previously appropriated money for the construction. Can you explain how that, so there was money appropriated and this authorizes already appropriated money? Feels like, or sounds kind of like double duty there. Maybe not, maybe I just don't understand it. If you could explain that.
Representative Detmer.
Originally, there was $250,000 that was appropriate from the general fund, put in an account, and they had, the committee had to raise $250,000. And I think you pointed out where our balance is at. This $150,000 would put us up into a point where you said you only had about $68,000 yet to raise. Right now, the cost of the project is about $750,000. So,
Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you also have a.
Mr. Chair, yes. One of the great things about this project, this is the first memorial that we have had that is actually repurposing a state asset that was broken. For those of you who are familiar with the Veterans Court of Honor, the pool has been broken for over two decades. I've been here for three decades, but it's been broken for over two decades. The pool leaks, and this would repurpose the statue and the water circulation system. There won't be standing water, so they won't have any of the risks involved with standing water. But it would repurpose a state asset. And so that's one of the reasons that we are so enthusiastic about this project.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Miller.
Now, Mr. Chair, and I want to make sure, just real quick clarification, is $150,000 would need a non-state match is what you just said, correct?
Correct.
Representative Detmer.
Okay. You. Mr. Chair and Representative Detmer, the money that's been raised from private sources and stuff like that meet that challenge, doesn't it? I mean, you don't need to create a new $150,000 for this, do you?
Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chair and Representative Miller, to get that total amount is what we're looking at, $750,000-some. So any money that is given from the state, that has to be matched.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Chair and Representative Detmer, I'll just trust you. You guys got the math figured out, but I'm a little bit confused on it. You don't need to explain it to me again. Things from what I see, if this is approved, you need to raise $68,000 more. That's what I heard, right? That's kind of it.
Ms. Kovaleski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Miller. With any remaining funds, it would go into an endowment fund and for any other additional costs. So $750,000 is getting at that minimum value of what we need to raise for the architectural purposes of this. If we would like to add, we've taken a lot of things out because we've realized that Right. Raising this, so we could make it better, or we could go into an endowment fund and any type of additional things needed for the memorial to maintain it.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Ms. Kovaleski, did I say that right?
Yes, you did, sir.
Okay. Ms. Kovaleski, I do nonprofit things and stuff like that, so I actually want to talk to you about this afterwards. Catch up with me at some point. I have some thoughts. So.
Thank you. Can I also add that we have tapped every single charitable gambling entity. We have went to the Lions Clubs, the VFWs, and the checks are coming in at 500, 1,000 at a time. And there isn't a rock that we are trying to not uncover at this point of time.
Oh, I totally respect that. Thank you. Maybe I'll throw some ideas away.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Representative Purcell.
Representative Miller, if you look in this, what you hand, there's something you can send in.
Mr. Chair, despite the way I come across, I'm not privately personally wealthy or anything like that. But we'll do what we can, certainly. But anyway,
we'll pitch in there.
That's right.
Thanks, Representative Purcell. Any other questions from the committee? Anybody from the audience care to testify for or against this bill?
And then, Mr. Chair, I have a quiz for the committee. Could anybody name the last Medal of Honor recipient from Minnesota?
I'll bet Representative Detmer knows.
Leo Thorson. Okay. And he, in fact, he was born in 1932, and I believe he passed away in 2017, served in North Vietnam. Was shot down over North Vietnam and was a prisoner of war. He was from Walnut Grove, Walnut Grove, Minnesota, and Redwood County, Minnesota. And we thought we could get him here for the Medal of Honor convention, but he wasn't in good health to do that.
He came.
He did come.
Yeah, he came.
I didn't meet him.
We did get him back to Walnut Grove, and it was kind of a bucket list last thing. So it was a beautiful thing.
We had 40-some Medal of Honor recipients here in Minnesota. Well, it was quite an event.
I wish I would have been there.
Yeah.
Well, before I give Representative Detmer his last words, Ms. Kovaleski, something you said struck my memory, and about 30 years ago I bought a brick at a VFW in Cook when I was there for a softball tournament. I should stop and see if the brick is still there. Anyway, last words, Representative
Detmer. Thank you, committee and Mr. Chair. And again, I move that House File 7773 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we're adjourned.